The story of Phineas Taylor Barnum. One of the greatest branches of modern industry is that of public entertainment. Much of its growth has been due to motion pictures and radio. But before these inventions were ever conceived, the idea of mass entertainment was born in the brain of Phineas Taylor Barnum. In the year 1825, young Barnum was clerking at a general store in his hometown, Bethel, Connecticut. It was a dull, uneventful life, especially for a lad like Barnum, whose thoughts were far beyond the grocery shelves and cider barrels. Sometimes a visiting farmer would drop in to warm his boots on the bulging iron stove and to be questioned by an eager youngster in a white apron.
What's it like up in Litchfield, Quigley? I've never been there.
Oh, it's about like it is here. Lots of snow on the ground, but the road ain't so bad.
Well, didn't you see anything interesting on your trip?
No, can't say that it is.
Well, you didn't come across anything new or strange?
No. Well, yes, I did, too. I see something that struck me as being right curious.
Yeah, what was it?
It was a dog. Just an ordinary-sized dog, but it had two natural tails. Yes, I recollect one of the tails is about 3 feet long.
You saw a dog with two tails?
Yep.
Say, that is something unusual. Who owns him?
Oh, farmer called Jones.
If a fella had a dog like that, he might make some money. People would pay to see a dog with two tails. Quigley, do you think I could buy him?
Oh, I reckon so. Guess $5 or $10 would buy him.
Say, I'm going up to Litchfield right now. I'll close up the store for the rest of the day,
hey,
and
I'll... You ain't aiming to go now. Why, it's 35 miles to Litchfield.
Well, I can be back by tomorrow. Do you realize what it means? With a dog like that, I could be independent. I could travel around the country.
Yes, yes, you could at that. Tell you what, Barnum. You go hitch up your wagon. I'll stay here and warm my feet. By the time you come back to close the store, I may have thought of something that'll help you.
All right, but don't tell anybody else about this. I'll be back in about 15 minutes.
Oh, there, Warren. Oh, there.
Hey, Quigley, come on out. I'm ready to go.
You all ready to go, huh?
Yep. I'm off for Litchfield. You got any suggestions to make?
Why, yes. I've been thinking it over. I neglected to mention something about that dog.
You weren't fooling me about
that dog. Oh, no, no. But I forgot to tell you that the dog with two tails is coming out of a tan yard. One of the tails is a cow's tail.
What?
He was carrying it in his mouth.
Oh. Yeah, I suppose the joke's on me.
Yeah. Say, forget them crazy ideas. Settle down to hard work and make a name for yourself. You'll never get no place running around looking for freaks.
Yes, Mr. Quigley, I guess maybe you're right.
For 15 restless years, Barnum searched for a profession. Then he began to eye longingly Scudder's American Museum, which stood on the corner of Broadway and Ann Streets in New York. Although penniless, Barnum immediately opened negotiations with Francis W. Olmsted, owner of the building.
You see, Mr. Barnum, I don't own the Scudder collection. I only own the building in which the museum is ours.
Yes, I know that, Mr. Olmsted.
And why have you come to me?
Because I'm, for the moment, financially embarrassed. I want to buy the museum, but I don't have the cash. Now, my proposition is this. I want you to buy the collection in your own name. Then I'll buy the property from you in a series of payments. You can make a good profit from it.
And how are you going to get the money to pay me?
I can make it from the gate receipts. The museum isn't paying well now, but when I take it over, things will be different.
You think you can make money out of it, eh?
I'm sure I can.
And of course, I'll expect you to put up some security.
Well, I'm afraid I haven't any, sir. Except my reputation and my good name.
Well, at least you're honest about the matter.
I want control of that museum, Mr. Olmsted. The agent is willing to sell everything for $12,000.
And as I understand it, Mr. Barnum, you want me to invest $12,000 on your reputation and good name. And if you should fail...
I won't fail. I can build it into the greatest attraction in New York. Just give me the chance.
I like your self-confidence, Mr. Barnum. All right. You can arrange to move into the museum at once.
Elated over his success, Barnum lost no time in arranging for the sale of the exhibit. But before the deal could be closed...
Mr. Olmsted, we've been cheated. I went down to see Mr. Heath this morning. He said that the collection had already been sold.
But Mr. Heath promised to sell it to us.
Well, he didn't. He sold it to the directors of Peel's Museum. They put up a $1,000 option yesterday.
Peel's Museum? Why did they want the Scudder collection?
I investigated that, too. They intend to put the two museums into one and then issue $50,000 worth of stock. The idea is to pocket $30,000 of it and then leave the stockholders to shift for themselves.
Why, that's nothing but a swindle.
Of course it's a swindle, but they won't get away with it.
And how can you stop them?
You leave that to me. The newspaper editors of New York are my friends. I'll have stories about it in every paper in the city. Those crooks will be lucky if they sell one single share. May we caution the public against investing in the stock of the Peel Museum. Don't be hoodwinked by a group of broken-down bank directors who are engaged in the exhibition of such monkey and gander skins. The incorporation of the Peel and American Museums is the most ridiculous thing New York has seen in many years. Other promotions of this kind have failed dismally. The main purpose of this scheme is to swindle the public.
Barnum's scathing newspaper articles did their work. Not one share of the museum stock was sold. And in a short time, the option on the Scudder collection was allowed to expire. From then on, the American Museum was under the management of P.T. Barnum.
Barnum's American Museum. The greatest display of curiosities ever seen under one roof. See General Tom Thumb, the smallest man in the world. Savage Indians living in their native wigwams. Strange fish and animals from all the corners of the earth. Friends, don't miss the continuous performance now going on in the lecture hall. Jugglers, acrobats, minstrels. Also, that highly moral and edifying drama, The Drunkard, played by a distinguished cast of performers.
Under Barnum's guidance, the museum flourished rapidly. By the end of the first year, Barnum was free from debt, and still the quarters continued to roll in. Soon, Phineas T. Barnum was a rich man, but his energy did not cease. On September 1st, 1850, a bulging sidewheeler cruised into New York Harbor. As it neared quarantine, a rowboat containing two men darted out to meet it, and T.T. Barnum hauled his bulky frame up the rope ladder.
Huh? Where is she, Captain?
Oh, up forward here, Mr. Barnum. I'll take you to her.
Have a good voyage?
Oh, excellent, sir. Oh, Miss Lynn.
Yes, Captain?
Oh, Miss Lynn, may I present Mr. Barnum?
How do you do?
How do you do? So you're Jenny Lynn. I had an idea you'd look like that. Just as pretty as they think.
Oh, you flatter me, Mr. Barnum.
No, not at all, not at all. If your singing only can measure up with your looks, I'll feel well repaid.
But, Mr. Barnum, you have never heard me sing.
Never?
Then why have you risked so much money to bring me to America when you have never heard me?
I've heard reports about your singing. That's good enough for me.
But the people in America, do they know about me also?
Look over there at the dock. See that crowd? Everyone in New York has come down to get a glimpse of Jenny Lynn.
But how did they hear of me? I have never been to America before.
I told them. For the past 6 months, I've been telling the whole nation that Jenny Lynn was coming. First, they weren't much interested. Then they became more and more curious until, well, there they are, screaming, yelling, ready to tear you apart with admiration.
It is very terrifying to see so many people.
Wait until you give your first concert. All America will be worshiping you. Now stand up there on the bow and wave your handkerchief. Good advertising. In fact, it's the best advertising the country has ever seen.
splendid. It was wonderful.
Thank you so much. Beautiful, Miss Lindy.
Thank you.
Oh, it is over. The concert is over, Mr. Barnum. Do you think it was a success?
Success? It was magnificent. Why, your share alone will amount to over $10,000.
But my voice, Mr. Barnum, do you think they liked my voice?
Of course they did. Jay tells me that even the critics were wild with enthusiasm. Bringing you to America was the greatest idea I've ever had. The women are all wearing Jenny Lind hats, Jenny Lind gloves, Jenny Lind dresses. Your name's a byword in every home.
I owe it all to you. You have done more than I can ever repay.
Forget it. I'm rewarded amply by just looking at you. But, of course, I'm not overlooking the ticket receipt. After all, my name is P.T. Barnum.
Barnum's career was long and varied, filled with moments of triumph and despair. It was not until he passed his 60th birthday that he organized the greatest show on earth, which later became known as Barnum and Bailey's Circus. In 1891, he died at the age of 80, leaving an estate of over $4 million. As a showman, Barnum was supreme. His methods of advertising are still in use today, and it was he who first placed public entertainment in the realm of big business. Phineas Taylor Barnum, Captain of Industry.